The Fear of Wages from 1956. In Deutschland, this is 1956. Now, that was Spike Milligan's choice from over 200 Goon Shows, mate, so you number them. Anyway, now, when the Goon Shows were first made, I was not born, and there were many other comedians who were not born too. Now, it's not our fault, but, you know, it's just true. But we have all caught the Goon Show bug. Here's Marky Thomas.
The stuff that I really got into was when I went to school, and this mate of mine had, his uncle was completely into the Goon Show, and he used to give us tapes of the records, and these were great. I mean, because he didn't have kind of like hi-fi equipment. He had a record player and one of those clunky old tape recorders. And so he'd obviously sit down, put the record on, and then press play and record, having put the tape recorder between the speakers, and then sort of quietly creep out the room and try, or sit down and listen and try not to laugh. Occasionally you actually heard a little bit of a chuckle from him in the background where he'd be listening to the tape and go, you know, or whatever. And that was, we used to get these tapes and completely got into it.
A Bow Street runner approaches.
Hello, hello. Who's left this screen but a robber with its lights off in broad daylight? Anybody in?
Yes.
Well, come on out, madam.
I can't. I haven't any clothes on. I'm waiting for the medical inspection.
Well, I reckon you need one, mate.
We all had a stab at doing Goon voices, and essentially you ended up...
Lee Hurst.
You'd kind of find the one that you felt comfortable with, and you ended up playing that character a lot when we'd read them out at break time, lunchtime, and that sort of thing. And often during class, because we were quite rebellious. But, yeah, it was Python, and then we stepped back to the Goons. It was very strange, because I think it was just because we weren't aware of it.
I hadn't grown up with that radio culture of listening to the Goons, and I didn't know any of the characters, and I didn't know what they were supposed to sound like, so I didn't sort of go, oh, that's Blue Bottle, or oh, that's so-and-so. Somebody actually showed me some pictures of what they looked like. I was really shocked. I was really shocked, because they didn't look like that in my mind. It's one of those old adages where people say, oh, the great thing about radio is it summons up pictures in your mind. And, of course, it's one of these adages which is true. And so when you suddenly see it, you suddenly go, no, they don't look like that at all. And it was just this sort of assault that I thought was fantastic, just coming at things from a completely weird angle. And that was the stuff that really attracted me to it. And the stupidity of it was just lovely.
Can I help you, son?
Are you a policeman?
No, I'm a constable.
Oh. What is the difference?
And they're spelt differently.
Help me, differently spelt constable.
Oh, what's happened to this dear old silver-bearded lady?
She was struck down from behind.
And not a moment too soon. Congratulations, sir.
I didn't do it.
Coward, hand back your OBE. Now, tell me, who did this felonious deed? What's happened to her?
It is much too dark to see. Yes. Strike a light.
Not allowed in blackout.
Strike a dark light.
No, madam. Madam, we daren't. Why, only 28 miles across the channel, the Germans are watching this coast.
Don't you be a silly pilly policeman.
Bravo, Henry.
Bitter poo.
Bitter poo.
They can't see a little match being struck.
Oh, all right. Any questions?
Yes, where are my legs?
Where are my...
We tried using a candle, but it wasn't very bright, and we daren't light it. So we waited for dawn, and there, in the light of the morning sun, we saw what had struck Miss Bannister. It was a batter pudding.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic.
My interest in comedy springs mainly from wanting to perform.
Al Murray.
I come from a very radio house. My family are very radio. And my father is mad about the Goons. So my earliest memory of a comedy thing, other than watching, say, the two Ronnies, you know, which you laugh at, but, you know, there's nothing rarefied about it or anything. The Goons was this bizarre universe, and I had the scripts and used to read the scripts, and wondering what on earth was going on, and the sound effects were always alarmingly specific, and I always wanted to know what a batter pudding being hurled would actually sound like.
It's very strange, because when I was 12, I actually, at school, I put on and appeared in The Phantom Batter Slinger of Bexley Hill-on-Sea, and that was the first real thing that I did to do with comedy, and rather precociously, at the age of 12, I directed and starred. Everyone else was going. I remember we were all sitting around and I was going, who wants to do this role? They said, oh, I'll do it. I said, oh, okay, who wants to do this one? Two people put their hands up. I said, all right, we'll toss it for it. And then it left the biggest part till the end. And it was like, who should do this one? And there's just me and this one bloke who hadn't got a part. And I said, I want to do it. I want to do this. And all the other blokes just said, yeah, Mark, you should do it. Yeah, you got it all together. You should do it, mate. So it was, I saved the best part for me.
I sort of grew up reading Goon Show scripts and then hearing them eventually and having my mind blown, because they didn't sound like anything I'd ever heard before or imagined, really.
Some of the guys had the records and made cassettes and brought them in. We listened to them in class. Then the Goon Show scripts came out in book form, so we would read those. And another guy from my class, Alex, he started writing his own Goon Show script. And that became the fad for a while. People would write their own scripts and we'd read them out during break. And I guess that was my first steps into writing comedy.
The kind of things, like, I saw when I was growing up, you know, apart from Laurel and Hardy, say, you know, it was definitely stuff that my father liked that we were allowed to watch. Adil O'Hanlon. So we were allowed to watch Pink Panther movies. And I don't really like them now very much, but I did love Peter Sellers at the time, and definitely was a major influence. And, you know, subsequently then I did start looking into Peter Sellers' history, and, you know, Goon Show got the scripts of those, and he was... I never really liked Spike Milligan, but I love Peter Sellers. I loved all his mimicry, and I know Spike Milligan deserves most of the credit for all of that stuff. But I did like Peter Sellers, and I liked something about him. He had that melancholy quality to him, which a lot of the great comics had as well, I think.
Everyone always says, oh, Spike Milligan, he's the guy who set it all off. And the Python people say that, and Vic Reeves and Bob Mortar are obviously drawing on that, and Harry Hill drawing on that English absurdity.
What? Me an idiot? Let me put this violin down, I'll tell you. Now listen, you don't think for 10 years I've been standing here on guard? I mutinied. I refused to obey an order.
There was nobody here to give any orders.
I gave them myself. Like this, listen. Private Eccles, fall in. You were late, come on, hurry up, Norton. Private Eccles, from the right, number. One. Fine. From the left, number. One. Good. Private Eccles, my good man. Slope, arms. I ain't not gonna do it. Come, my good man. I'm giving you an order. Slope, arms. I ain't not gonna slope my arm. Come, Private Eccles. Oh. Ooh. My good man, why are you pointing that gun at me? Put that gun down, my good man. I won't. Yes, you will. I won't. Yes, you will. I won't. I won't. I won't. I won't. I won't. I won't. I shot him.
Really, it's Spike Milligan that I'm a big fan of.
Harry Hill.
And I came to Spike Milligan through his TV show, The Q-Series. And I didn't see many of them because it was always on at 9 o'clock on BBC Two, and I was always forced to watch the news. So if my dad was away or something, I would occasionally watch the Q-Series. And I remember watching that, and although a lot of it is not very funny as such, sometimes I would watch it and you couldn't really laugh at it, but you kind of appreciated what he was getting at. And a lot of it is obviously hilarious. And so then I went out and bought the Goon Show tapes and scripts and stuff and picked up on that.
Do you mind if I have a strange request? It's this.
I really want to say that.
Of course. I'll do it at once. Thank you.
did you ask for?
See, with that routine, it's knowing when to stop and when to start. You know, it starts off and it's funny, and then it stops being funny for a little while, and then as it goes on, it gets funnier. And at some point, I imagine it'll stop being funny. But maybe if you went on a bit longer, you could find out it was funnier again.
I love those things where they just take ages and ages and ages and then finally resolve it. And the sound is so complete. The people sound like sound effects. And the script doesn't matter what happens, and you're just part of this universe and you're let in. And I think that's wonderful. It's very exciting as well that his vision, he had his vision and it was complete. Milligan's vision was complete. And he had the people that could do it and all that sort of thing. I mean, the show does sound like, I mean, the stories are, he wrote it for 26 weeks or whatever, and he'd be handing in next week's script while rehearsing this week's and talking about the week afters and all that sort of thing. And you can feel the pressure in the programme. But the sound effects, I mean, the whole thing is right. I mean, when someone gets their vision and they get it bang on, that's when it's really, really exciting. I think comedy, when it all comes into focus, and they did that with The Goon Show. Everything fitted perfectly, and they got it dead right. Even Max Geldrey in the middle with his harmonica, even that fits, because it's from then as well, you know. My mum used to talk about rationing, and you can hear the rationing, or the end of rationing in that programme as well. There's that sort of exuberance and everything. And it's marvellous.
I've got a nasty cough, me.
Yes, you have got a nasty cough. Yes. What happened to that nice cough you used to have? You know, the one that used to go... That's the one.
That one, yeah. Someone shot it, me.
In the quill. Did you have it stuffed, Henry?
Now you're asking me something.
I know I'm asking you something.
Henry and Min are so annoying. It's truly marvellous. They're probably the only people whose stuff I've sort of pursued and tried to... Because there's the Running, Jumping, Standing Still film that they made, which has got Leo McKernan and people like that, with Dick Lester, and, you know, who ended up doing Hard Day's Night. So that sort of... And the Beatles were into The Goons, which is the other thing. And there's a strand running through there because George Martin produced Beyond the Fringe. So, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, Yellow Submarine could be a Goons record, the bit in the middle with all the noise and the sound effects. So, if anything, The Goons are like... After the war, I suppose, they were like year zero for British comedy. I mean, everything's either a reaction to The Goons or a denial of it or drawing on the same heritage, and that's why I love them. I mean, I love them anyway, but you can see, like, their position in things, I think.
Al Murray. I was first introduced to The Goons by my father, Harold Izzard, or John Izzard, because he's got two names. That's got nothing to do with it. But, and I told this to Spike when I first met him, and I was in Dubai... just cruising through. No, my dad was working there. And, no, actually, I wasn't in Dubai. I was in Abu Dhabi, which the British call Abu Dhabi, but I'm sure isn't. I'm sure nowhere in Arab countries is called Dhabi. But Abu Dhabi, which is in the United Arab Emirates, and Dubai was the sort of big principality around there. And they had Radio Dubai, and The Goons would come on every, I don't know when it was, once a week or twice a week. And this woman, speaking in English, because I think it was broadcast for, you know, English-speaking channel, but she had her she was probably an Arab woman doing it with a bit of an accent, so it was quite an interesting thing. And she was saying, and now we have crazy time for you people, here we go with those Sons of Fun, they are The Goons. And my dad said, you gotta listen to this, because my dad was a big fan, and I thought, this is amazing stuff. And we bought tape recorders and started recording it. We've got the Shifting Sands of Waziristan, and we were trying to put it in, and we got the button wrong, so it's got me and my brother and my dad talking over the front bit. Yeah, I got it now. No, and my voice really squeaky, and my brother's voice really squeaky. Yeah, I think that's it. And we're over the first parts of the Shifting Sands. Well, it's actually the middle bit, because we missed the beginning bit.
Are you wearing your long winter drawers, Echo?
No,
have a word on mutton.
Aren't you afraid of going round without wearing any of them?
No.
What courage! Do you know that you're a second Wyatt Earp?
Doesn't Wyatt Earp wear long drawers?
I do not know. I have never looked up his trouser leg.
I'll tell you something.
No.
I looked up my dad's trousers once. And I discovered something.
What?
That's where he keeps his legs. You ever seen your daddy's legs?
No. He always takes him to work with him.
Oh. What for, Bottle?
He uses them to stop his trousers from bending.
We would listen to them while we were there for a bit, and then Dad would... We had to go back to England, and Dad would keep recording them and sending them over. And then, back in Bexhill, where I lived, I discovered that reading Adolf Hitler, My Partner's Downfall, that Spike was stationed in Bexhill. And this was incredible, because I was desperate to do comedy. I'd always wanted to act beforehand, but, you know, I was big into comedy. Didn't realize you could specialize in it. And by teenage years, I thought, comedy's what I want to do. And then realizing that Spike was in Bexhill, because no one comes from Bexhill. There's no, there's a list of people, as long as your arm come from Bexhill. It's Spike. And so I got the book, and I even cycled around Bexhill trying to find places. Like, Galley Hill was where he was stationed. He was up there with a gun, and gun emplacement with one shell, so when Hitler came, they'd throw the shell and then run away. And I was at the bottom of Galley Hill selling ice creams in a kiosk. And I thought, this juxtaposition must mean that comedy, surreal, weird comedy, is can happen. I could do it, you know. And the proximity of Spike totally inspired me to believe I could do it. So, yeah, and I cycled around. He was stationed at other places, and he played the trumpet at the Delaware Pavilion, and that's where I was based, in the self-service cafe there. So Spike was just all over Bexhill. And then there's a battered pillaring hurdle of Bexhill-on-Sea, and there were these references to Bexhill in the thing. So I thought, yeah, this is great. So that was kind of, in a long-winded way, my introduction to the Goons. And it was the characters. I was really into characters. I just played characters myself. That's what I liked doing. So Blood Knot, Grip Pipe Thin, Eccles and Blue Bottle and all these strange different voices. I gradually worked out this is just three people, or a lot of it was just two people. And I love those different characters and the plays that they would have on it, like Blood Knot quite often just go, that's better. And, you know, you're just playing on where you think it's going, and it was just flying off in different directions. And it was, you know, the 50s, there were a lot of sort of post-war references or wartime references, which also kind of fascinated me.
Right then, the British arrived.
Hands up or I'll draw my rations.
Himmel! It's an English nappy manager.
Don't move. Don't move or I'll turn the key in this tin of Spam. Now, where's Jim Rommel?
He's gone to see Fred Hitler. You'll never catch him, Englander. He's flying back to Deutschland.
Nonsense, he's going to Germany.
I stole lines. Actually, the first thing I ever wrote at 16, 17, this god-awful play called Saturday. But I stole a complete Spike joke, which was somebody says, where do you live? He says, well, you see the pigsty? See the big manor house behind it? Yes, well, I live in the pigsty. I love that one. But I read the whole history, the stuff in the pub, and I'd seen all the early pictures with the smoking leeks or stuff. And Benteen was there and doing writing, and then it was all Spike doing it all, which must have been, obviously was hellish from everything, you know, just he has to write it all in. Sellers and Seacom go off and then come back and say, oh, we've got a script here. And Larry Stevens as well. So, yeah, it's just, you just, in the end, you knew that it was all coming out of Spike's head. And he kick-started the whole thing. And that influenced Python, and then Python influenced Saturday Night Live in America. So all postmodernist comedy seems to come from Spike. So he's the godfather. Yeah, so I was just, you know, a huge fan of the Goons.
They're very good, you know. And yes, they appear to have finished. So everyone, back to their own beds. Good night.
Coming up after the news, everything you've ever wanted to know about the Goon Show, and more, like shoe sizes and things, in At Last the Go On Show.